guys. This is Doug. Thanks for listening to What's the Hazard. I want to take a minute and thank our incredibly generous sponsors, Custom Concrete Specialists, PML Construction, the Nebraska Department of Labor On-Site Consultation Group, Liquid Trucking, RiskSkill Consulting. Thank you, one and all. We really appreciate your support. Now, today's episode. Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday. This is Doug, and you're listening to What's the Hazard. It is Friday, March 15th, 2 days from St. Patrick's Day, if that's your thing. So have a safe weekend, hopefully. Yeah. I don't do the St. Patrick's Day thing anymore. I don't know if you guys do, but
no. For a couple hours.
We have kids now, so it gets a little harder and harder to get out.
Get in before the nuts are out on the road, hopefully. Yep. Yeah. Well, my guest this morning, we have the entire executive team of Tolaco Safety Solutions this morning. You'll recognize Dustin. Dustin's been on the program before. Great response to his previous episode. It was fantastic information. We've got the CEO, actually, Jill Tolaco.
Yes.
So thank you for coming.
Thanks for having
thank
us.
You.
And
yeah.
you are you're the worker. The
labor. Yes.
You're the
worker.
Laborer,
yeah.
The brains.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's how it works at my house,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I like it.
Well, thank you for coming, guys.
Thanks for having
Good
us.
Good morning. And you're on spring break.
I am.
Good for
yeah.
you. Do you have... Has it been spring break all week?
Whole week. I get a whole week off.
Oh,
and
good
our
for
kids
you.
Are in a different district, so it's just, I get my time
I was
to myself.
Wondering.
And,
yeah. Nice. Good for you. That
and
was smart.
Get to yeah. finally come see Dustin in action.
Very
yeah,
good.
So it's
terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for coming, both
Thanks
of you.
For having
thank
us.
You.
We appreciate it. So this is something, as we talked about last time, this is something I saw you give this a presentation training, Stop the Bleed training at a conference probably a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I was just blown away by not only the information, but your charisma, the way you give the training, being a paramedic on the Omaha Fire Department, it was just so impactful. You live this every day. You know the importance of it. And I thought everybody needs this training, man, particularly in my world, in the industrial world, in the construction world. They need this training. So if you wouldn't mind, maybe just go back and remind everybody a little, if they didn't see the first episode.
Yeah.
About Stop the Bleed training, why it's so important, that kind of thing, and what you guys are doing.
Yeah, for sure. So as paramedics in the community, both myself and our team, we see these safety gaps in the community. We know our response times with the city of Omaha are good, but there still leaves for a lot of room for error and injury and death. So if you're east of 72nd Street here in Omaha, and I know you have listeners all over the country, but if you're east of 72nd Street in Omaha, there's a good chance we'll beat you in 5 to 6 to 7 minutes. If you're west of 680, that time could be pushing is very, very commonly pushing 10 to 12 minutes. If you're west of 204th Street, the territory is vast. These mm-hmm. territories are big. And when I work overtime out west, I work in Northeast Omaha, but when I work out west, the thing that strikes me is, golly, how long has it taken us to get here?
Right. So, am I still in Nebraska?
Yeah. So the American College of Surgeons will tell you can bleed to death in less than 3 minutes. You can have an anoxic brain injury from no oxygenated blood to your brain and start in 4 minutes. So I'm just a dumb fireman. I'm not very good at math, but the easy math will tell you you'll be bled out long before we get there, and you'll have mm-hmm. major damage long before we get there. So we, as a community, we really need to be able to bridge that gap and bridge that time between the time of injury and or illness and the time medics get to your side. So that's really the basis of a lot of our training, specifically bleeding control. It was created, the whole concept was created right after the Sandy Hook tragedy. And Dr. Lenworth Jacobson and his trauma team had zero survivability following that terrible shooting. Mm-hmm. There was 25 and 6-year-olds that perished in that terrible event. And they literally were at the hospital in the ER waiting for patients to show up. And they waited and they waited and they waited and they didn't accept one patient that day. So he got together following that event. He realized that this was very similar to the early 1960s. He said, people were dying and in the hospital system all over. And then they finally brought CPR into the world. Right. And they brought it into the hospitals. They're teaching people. They trained 250,000 people about 12 years later, circa like 1972, they started the American Heart Association, and it just kind of snowballed from there. And he said, we need to do with bleeding control something very similar to that. So they got together at what today is known as the Hartford Consensus. They met at Hartford Hospital, and they created this Stop the Bleed curriculum. It's a 90-minute canned course that we're pumping out all over the country, and it could be today it could be a veterinarian that's teaching it. It could be a nurse, a doctor. In the early days, it was just EMTs, paramedics, police officers, and doctors, essentially. Today, they've opened it up. They're training people. We're trying to get out to the masses on how to do these very basic skills of bleeding control. So when I first started this whole thing, everybody in their brain was like, what are the chances of me being in that high risk, low frequency emergency of an active shooter, right? Everybody associates this with active shooter. When the reality is, I work up in Northeast Omaha. I probably deal with more shootings than anybody in the entire tri-state area. But we utilize these skills and this equipment way more on job-related injuries mm-hmm. and car accidents than we ever do on shootings, and we get a lot of shootings.
Absolutely.
So getting this curriculum out into the job force and having these everybody reprogram their brain that, holy cow, yeah, it's fun to watch that buy-in from people because mm-hmm. everybody comes in with the same mindset. Oh, what are the chances of me being in shot? Mm-hmm. You know, it may be very, very small, but you are more than likely to roll up to, God forbid, my family on a car accident where you might need these skills to mm-hmm. save your community.
No doubt. And that's exactly why it had the impact on me that it did, because we deal with lots of amputations in industrial settings, mm-hmm. impalements, injuries like that, you know, other kinds of wounds and things that can be really traumatic. For one thing, nobody knows how to respond to those. I mean, we get basic first aid, so I can put on a Band-Aid and I can maybe flush out your eye if you get some dust in your eye. But truthfully, you don't. I mean, the training that you get in first aid is useful, but it's not really the training that you need in an industrial setting for something catastrophic like this.
For sure.
And we were talking before we started, you know, you're a teacher.
Absolutely.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Both of you have been led to service, apparently, for some reason. Two thankless jobs that are, you know, so thank you for what you're doing, both of you. But even in a school environment, not everyone has had this training and probably should. I know you guys are out just humping this training constantly, trying to get it out into the community, but I think we can do better. You know, I think companies need to have this. This is something, it's like the Heimlich maneuver. Yeah. It's like CPR. Mm. It's something that everybody should know.
It's interesting.
Everybody.
Because people don't realize they need it until they sit through the training. And then they're like, holy cow, I really dodged a bullet not knowing this stuff. And it's very basic, very rudimentary stuff. But once they know it, the companies that we train in all of these courses that we put together, they do it for job safety, but they do it because this is a value to their employees to take home to their family,
their communities.
They're
absolutely
more than likely to use these at home when, God forbid, a car accident or a boat accident or mm-hmm. out at their camper.
Yeah, right.
So it really is a value to their employees. And we're seeing in the community that people are just now starting to wake up to some of these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's my goal that you take early retirement from the fire department and you do this every day.
We'd love to.
Because I have family. You know, I've got sons. I've got a wife. I've got friends. And I would love it if they had a need that someone would be available to provide this. You know, this really important service. So let's talk a little bit about, now that we've convinced everybody, but they're going to do this training, right? We're going to do this training. how do they get a hold of you? How do they contact?
Yeah. So we do have a website. It's TalacoSafetySolutions.com, but we'll give our phone number out and you can get a hold of me and we'll just set it up. We have a team of all young paramedics that all work on very busy ambulances in Northeast Omaha. All of them teach or have taught at the community college for Metro or Creighton University or one of these other. So everybody that teaches for us are paramedics. They're all, I guess, blessed under fire with doing this mm-hmm. job in Northeast Omaha, and they all like to teach. So usually charismatic guys and gals, mm-hmm. and we basically, they already know the skill set. We just bring them into our training. Like yesterday at MUD, we had them come in and watch our curriculum. Mm-hmm. They know the skills. They just need to come up with their own stories.
Yeah, just know how to actually mm-hmm. provide the training,
yep.
how to do that.
Because knowing the skills is very, way more simple if you can help your customers connect the dots. Mm-hmm. So like for instance, we talk about amputations and stuff. Most people don't realize that in an amputation, in the presence of bleeding or not, that's the disclaimer, or not, you still need a tourniquet. So Omaha Fire responded to a call recently where it was somewhere by the rail yard, we're assuming down in South Omaha, where there was a gentleman that had his hand completely chopped off. Hand was in a glove inside a rail car, and the guy was walking around trying to figure out how to get his hand back. And the there's no people around everywhere, and it sounds like they might have had access to tourniquets, but they didn't think to put it on. So it's scenarios like that that help everybody connect the dots. It reminds them, hey, we need to do this.
And me personally, I would much rather have the training from a paramedic, truthfully. I've run into other people that do this training. So, you know, there are quite a few instructors out in the community. And if that's the best you can do, then you can have your phlebotomist from the Red Cross do it or whatever. That's fine. But who better than someone who lives this every day, who can recount real situations, you know, put it in context, like you're saying, and connect those dots. So I think your guys would be the first choice, truthfully.
And there's another scenario that's like what you're saying. We get nurses that come out and train with us a little bit too. And when we talk about wound packing and specifically holding pressure, that's the first thing we do in any major bleed, right, is hold major pressure. A lot of these nurses are like, well, they teach us in nursing school to utilize our fingertips to hold pressure because that it has more pounds per square inch. Well, if you hear that, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. But I just know from the real world, that does not work. Your fingers fatigue within seconds.
Absolutely.
So it's our guys and gals are doing this in the field every single day, and we know what works and what doesn't. So
awesome. Yeah, we need to get the training done. So TalacoSafetySolutions.com is the website. Make sure that you get on. You're going to be talking to Jill probably, right?
Yep.
You know, she's going to help you get set up, get it scheduled. Dustin or one of your guys will come out and do this training. I envision this like in every one of my clients. That's been my goal to get, and I'm saying that selfishly because I want them to be in a position where they can respond. The other thing we were talking about before we started was for those of you that are under OSHA's jurisdiction, you realize that OSHA's expectation is 1910.151 is the regulation. Go read it for yourself. But you are expected to be able to provide that initial response to an incident within 4 minutes. They say 3 to 4 minutes, so let's say 4 minutes on the outside. And you've been telling me that some of these things, if you don't get that response within 2 to 3 minutes, it might be too late. And there is no guarantee. I think sometimes, you know, we all know that our local firefighters are doing the best they can, but if they're on another call or if they're short-staffed, if they're whatever that issue is, they run into traffic. You know, they run into a train, a rail crossing for, you know, I mean, all sorts of shit happens. So if they can't be there within 4 minutes, we've got a problem.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we should depend on them to be providing this response. I think we should depend on ourselves, train our folks, equip them properly to provide the response so that when the professionals get there, they can take over and correct what we've done wrong, perhaps, but
yeah, the fire department operates off of NFPA average. So NFPA, so the average is supposed to be around 5 minutes. But as most people know, as you get into certain areas, the fire stations are a little bit farther apart, depending on traffic. And then what people may or may not know is the public, we get abused at sometimes. So people call for just ridiculous stuff, and that's fine. That's what your tax dollars are at work for. But we're getting called to chap lips, and I have eyelashes and eyes, and we take those people to the hospital. So that's fine. But what that does is it takes a rig that's maybe close to you that's having a sudden cardiac arrest out of service because we're taking somebody to the hospital for whatever that is. And then so now that it's the next in rig coming from elsewhere to get to you.
I got you.
So these times can vary. So it's imperative that we as a public, as civilians, need to be able to render aid and buy that much needed time.
And so what would the average course take? You're talking about maybe 90 minutes to 2 hours to do a course.
So the Stop the Bleed curriculum is we can do lunch and learns. We're usually going pretty fast with that, but we can do it 60 to 90 minutes. 90 minutes is more comfortable. That's the actual Stop the Bleed curriculum. Our new life-saving first aid class, that one ideally would be 2 hours. We can do it in an hour and a half, but that covers some of those more high risk, low frequency emergencies that we're seeing in the community, i.e. opioid recognition, Narcan administration, which is a huge problem around our area. And most people, we're just not talking about it. Heimlich maneuver, you know, if when we go on a choking, it's usually one of two scenarios. Either that person is completely unresponsive and not breathing because they basically have that object still in their airway, or somebody had already successfully done the Heimlich and they're walking around talking. So again, time is of the essence. Anaphylaxis. People don't realize that each time someone is introduced to an allergen, it can get potentially a little bit worse each time. So we're finding people that don't have time to get to their EpiPen.
Right.
They don't have enough wind to get to their EpiPen. So we're teaching the community, you need to be able to know what an EpiPen looks like, what it is, and furthermore, how to assist that patient, how to use it. So we cover that, cover stroke recognition. Seems very basic, but we're getting people in our community that are waiting way too long to call. And as you know, the number one important question for anybody with a stroke is, when was the last time known well? When did this all start? Because as soon as it starts, your clock is moving. And the data shows we have between a 3 and a 4.5 hour window to get them to care to a stroke center. So here in Omaha, it's UNMC and it's Emmanuel. We're showing up to houses and people are like, yeah, it started yesterday.
Damage. I didn't even know that. UNMC and Emmanuel are the two that
they
have
are.
And we have people
that are throwing their family members in what we call the Fambulance, throw them in the car and they're running them up. They're like, oh, we're taking them to Bergen. That's the trauma center. So Bergen's not the stroke
center.
To
be transported from Bergen.
So then, as Omaha Fire, we don't transport interfacility. So what happens is then the hospital calls one of the private ambulance companies who are understaffed, and sometimes it can be a really long wait, and it affects the time that it takes these patients to get the care. So we cover that, and we cover bleeding control in this course. We cover seizures. People are doing crazy stuff to their family members that are having seizures. They're sticking spoons in their mouths. They're literally dumping.
I saw that in a movie. That's not right.
No. Okay. Literally dumping sugary substances down their mouth, thinking their blood sugar is low, and it's causing more harm.
I heard you were supposed to do like a sugar suppository or something. Is that not? That's not true.
No.
Okay. See, a lot of misconceptions out there.
But these are all the things that we're a lot of the safety gaps that we're seeing in the community that we're trying to teach. And one of our biggest customer right now that we're teaching this to, it's been eye opening for these people. So ideally, 2 hours would be that perfect time frame for that.
Okay. And so both courses, Stop the Bleed, the use of tourniquets, wound packing, catastrophic bleeding. And as you said, something that I didn't even consider, but you may not have the bleeding. You may have had the injury, but it might not be maybe based on what happened to those arteries and stuff, if they pull up or they tighten up.
So with an amputation, for instance, your body is an amazing machine and it wants to compensate. So in those scenarios, and we saw it with the Boston bombing, those people, and they always said the improvised tourniquet with the belts saved so many lives. Well, the trauma, we go to active shooter conferences all the time, and the trauma doc that was attending for that emergency said almost every single one of those improvised tourniquets were improperly placed or ineffective. Well, what actually happened was these people's bodies compensated, those arteries constrict, we call it vasoconstriction, and the body essentially shunts down in those areas. But at some point, your body is going to decompensate. And what do you think happens to those arteries?
They let go.
They open back up, and that patient will bleed to death. So in any amputation, in the presence of bleeding or not, it's imperative you get a tourniquet placed.
Okay. And so you also, in addition to giving instruction on those pieces of equipment, you guys have those, right? You guys are able to offer those kits.
Yep. So we supply. That was kind of how we got into the business, following a grad school project. We realize that as the fire department, we can't enter in a hostile threat situation. So we're like, well, we'll get this equipment with the police. So we did a big fundraiser, got Omaha Police to carry these kits that we envisioned. And then when we were getting ready to announce it to the media, the chief schmatter came up to us and he goes, hey, Dustin, I really appreciate you doing this. This is a great deal for the city of Omaha, but I need you to know realistic expectations. Our officers are trained to walk through that front door in an active shooter, a hostile threat takeover. step over somebody that's bleeding to death to go isolate and eliminate that threat. So we will not be bringing these kits in with us. So that was kind of our aha moment. We realized we need to get this equipment and this training into public facilities. Mm-hmm. So our mass casualty bleeding control kits are in most of the soft targets around Omaha. So CHI Center, Baxter Arena, TD Ameritrade Park, the Chuck, most of the public schools around the area. Mm-hmm. But we've evolved over, that was in the early days. Today we deal with more construction companies and industry than we do because as you know, active shooter is at high risk, low frequency. We're seeing that the industrial world is a little bit, it's still high risk, but a little bit more frequent.
More frequent. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There were hundreds of amputations every year when I was working for OSHA. Wow. And I still get calls, you know, I feel my phone jiggle and I pull my phone out expecting to see, you know, please call me as soon as possible. And that usually means we've had some type of an injury, an amputation, something like that, an impalement or some other puncture wounds or something. It happens pretty frequently, unfortunately. And I just, we're ill prepared for that as companies, as facilities. So I just think this is something that should be mandatory for everybody.
Absolutely.
Just like you said, everybody at your school should be trained how to do this.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I say that, you know, sadly, you know, but everybody should. We should.
So Missouri this next year, they're making it mandatory that the equipment and the training is going to be in every school district. Texas has already done that. Omaha, they're in the state of Nebraska. It's still not mandatory yet, but I mean, that's why Jill's so passionate about this space is being a school teacher. And it's not just hostile threat stuff in school. It's kids getting injured on the playground.
Oh, yeah. Without question.
So it's
a lot. Like my boys.
Yeah.
Falling off the playground equipment.
Dustin said that they do it like with broken arms and stuff like that. Everybody does just assume, you know, shooting. And then
it's
especially
always
with women,
the shooting thing.
We hear that and you get scared and you're like, I don't want to talk about a shooting or think about it. So I think that it is like when he goes into the school, it is kind of nerve wracking just to talk about bleeding control because that's all you think about.
Yeah, none of us want to even think that.
Yes.
But that's not a great strategy.
But I'd rather know how to do it.
Right.
And also, unfortunately, there's not enough tourniquets even in the school. There's maybe 12 for our, you know, most schools are 600 kids. And sadly,
they buy
12. You buy 12 tourniquets. Well, Dustin was telling yesterday that on most accidents, you almost need 2 tourniquets per wound.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so think about that. There's 6 people then, you know,
so we're just not well prepared.
It isn't. Yeah.
And I think, the ignoring it and hoping it goes away is not a good strategy.
No.
We went into one of Nebraska's fastest growing companies here recently and the powers to be, listen to us and they go, well, we're not saying this is a bad idea. But we're just saying that we don't really want to hang this equipment up on our wall because we don't want our employees to think that we're expecting anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't say this, but in the back of my brain, I'm thinking, I'm looking at a fire extinguisher. You're not expecting a fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have smoke alarms.
Mm-hmm.
You're not expecting a fire.
That's a great
You have
point.
An AED. You're not expecting a sudden cardiac arrest.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just an insurance policy. You hope you buy that stuff and it never gets used. But if you need it and don't have it, you're in a tough spot.
I, as an employee, I think I would feel better that equipment was available than, oh my gosh, that scares me.
Absolutely.
We might have an incident. I think that's kind of naive.
It's way easier for us. We do probably 50% of our business now is we do AEDs, AED maintenance programs and stuff. It's way easier for us to kind of ease in with that. And then, by the way, have you thought about bleeding control? And then I can have this conversation. But it's a constant uphill sales cycle, trying to talk to everybody about the importance of it. And then we offer to come in and do a stop the bleed. And then they're like, and I see it every day in class. The first thing they do is they get on their phone and they're like, where do I get this equipment? One of the big problems that we have in the community out there, tourniquets aren't cheap. If you find a tourniquet online for less than $30, it is counterfeit. These Chinese counterfeits, you can buy 4 of them for the price of an American-made one. I could take one of those Chinese counterfeits right now with one hand and twist it, and these windlass rods are snapping.
Mm-hmm.
They might work on some of these smaller muscle groups, but on these big thighs and big muscles where you really need them, they will break. And you don't... It's not worth saving a few bucks.
Yeah, this is not the place to be cheap.
Yeah.
Right? Get the right stuff. Get good quality stuff.
Yep.
I totally agree. So one of the things that resonates with me is the EpiPen administration. I've got a son that has some fairly significant sensitization to tree nuts and stuff. You know, he was that kid. And I can remember the first time when we discovered that, when he had been eating something, and he's, I can't, my throat hurts, I can't swallow. And then he breaks out in hives, and we're all going, what the, you know. It freaked us out. And I know that from my experience in the workplace that people can become sensitized to different chemicals, different things that they're exposed to, and that that can increase, the severity of that can increase unexpectedly. So your comment about having that EpiPen available and knowing how to administer it, particularly if it's if the person is down and they are unable to self-administer, you want to be able, you want to know how to do that.
Yeah,
it's just like the Narcan, man. I just
we've had a uptick with calls where first off, most people realize that you could wake up tomorrow and be allergic to something you never knew you were allergic to. Our candidate at the fire station went to Vegas last year, and he said he was sitting there eating at a buffet. He started having severe trouble breathing. Lips started swelling, airway. This is what we're concerned about here. I don't care. We're not necessarily compared about somebody being flush skin and getting hives. When that tongue starts to swell and the lips start to swell, that's what we are concerned about. They called 911. Fire department there in Las Vegas showed up. They gave him epinephrine via IV, got him to the hospital, realized, hey, you're allergic to gluten. He goes, I've been eating gluten my whole life. So you can wake up tomorrow and be allergic to something you never knew. But furthermore, we're seeing an uptick in calls where people are, this is coming on so fast, they don't have time to get to their EpiPen. So that's an issue.
That's terrifying.
So we need everybody that we work with, our loved ones, to know what an EpiPen is, have that conversation where it's kept, and then furthermore, how to help them self-administer it. So
it seems like we should be carrying these in our cars as well. Like every one of us should have a smaller kit perhaps in our car. Like you said, if you roll up onto a crash or an incident of some sort.
And that's the challenge here in Nebraska. So we talk so much in this class about opioid recognition, Narcan administration. There's a 400% increase in fentanyl poisoning in Douglas County alone between 2019 and 2020. And there's a lot of reasons, which that's a whole nother episode. But so it's an issue. So as you know, the state of Nebraska, you can fill out the appropriate paperwork and anybody can get free opioid or sorry, free Narcan, right? You can go to Walgreens right now and get buy two Narcans for $50. But where do you keep it? EpiPen, where do you keep it? Ideally, yeah, I would keep it in my car, but in the state of Nebraska, when it's negative 20 outside, that chemical can't freeze. When it's 120 degrees in the middle of summer, that chemical's not supposed to be over 104 degrees. So bleeding control, yes, you can keep in your car and it'll work at no matter what the temperature is. But if somebody were to put together some of these chemicals, we're trying to figure out what's the best location to keep them, unless you keep them on you at
some
all times.
Some kind of a go bag that you carry with you or something.
Yep, absolutely.
Interesting, man.
So there's a lot that goes into this, and that
I didn't know any of that either.
That's opioid issue here in the area. When I first became a medic 9 years ago, we were using Narcan quite a bit down by like the homeless shelters and whatnot for the transients doing heroin and stuff like that. Today, there is no one demographic that is more prevalent than others. There is no one area of town that is more prevalent than others. Just as much Narcan is getting used in East Omaha as it is out west. And it's not just drug users. It's accidental. It's grandma and grandpa accidentally having too many fentanyl patches on. It's, as you know, they put everything in gummies anymore. These families are affected. Little kiddos don't know the difference between fentanyl-laced gummies and their gummy bears. They're accidentally getting into mom and dad's medicine cabinets. Mothers and fathers getting sent home from surgery, prescribed morphine. And then, by the way, here's some Narcan. Not only did they prescribe them Narcan, but they prescribed them morphine, didn't tell them what the signs and symptoms of an opioid overdose is, nor how to use the Narcan. So it's an education that everybody needs right now.
Absolutely, man. Oh my gosh. I'm terrified. This is horrible. No, it's actually something that, you know, since the time that we met I was exposed to the training, it just seems like something that needs to be done, which is why it's important to me. And thank goodness it's important to you guys that you're making this available, that you're doing this training. And it was fun. I know this sounds kind of gloom and doomy, but the training was really enjoyable. We had a good time doing it. There were some hands on. One of your daughters was there helping her dad. That was so cute. Everybody was like, oh, that's so cute, man. Putting tourniquets on each other and stuff. And they don't go around your neck, right?
No.
Okay. I was going to say, one of the guys I was working with wanted to put it around my neck for some reason. But again, all those misconceptions, we don't know how to use that stuff. And man, as you know better than anyone, when the shit hits the fan and you start to, you know, the adrenaline is pumping, you need to have practiced this stuff.
For sure.
You don't want to be reading the label in that moment. You know,
it's it is a perishable skill too. And there's a lot of old, I guess, philosophies that went away. So just let's say, you know, a lot of our people that were teaching our military, and I love our military. Mm-hmm. They used to teach with tourniquets. Once you get it on, every couple minutes, you relieve the pressure and let blood flow through. Well, we don't do that anymore. Once it's on, it's on. It stays on. So we're re-coaching that. It's a perishable skill. So just because you did it last year, you know, when the shit hits the fan, your fine motor skills go out the window.
Absolutely.
So you need to have this in your muscle memory. So every year you need to do it. And furthermore, practice is important, but we shouldn't practice with our actual equipment. So each facility should have some practice gear. Yeah, they should have it so that they can bring it out and practice with it and utilize it.
Do you guys offer any like open enrollment classes? I mean, right now you're doing classes specific to industrial request or whatever that institution might be. They request training, but like say that, you know, my wife and I or some of the neighbors wanted to take a class. Do you have open enrollment.
We always tell everybody to just give us a call and we'll set something up. If we can get a couple people together, we'll get it knocked out.
Okay.
A lot of times we'll do some of these courses pro bono just to get in and get the life saving equipment business. You know, Boy Scout troops and Girl Scout troops and things like schools. Most time we don't charge those. We want our organizations and our kids to know how to do this because the life saved could be your own. I mean, you're trying to get in with some of these kiddos organizations, they might turn around and save their parents.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's incredibly gracious and noble of you to do that. In the industrial world, we're going to charge money for this because it's something that they need to be doing. And it's your time and your expertise. And, you know, you have family, you know, you have people to take care of. So, you know, it's worth the investment.
We appreciate you taking care of us. And
yeah, man, this is really important stuff. And so we were talking before, you guys are children, 42 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Something
like that.
You've been married for about 10 years or so.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Good for you. And you've got a couple of kids.
Yeah, we have two little girls.
A couple little girls.
9 and 5.
Oh, that's nice. Yep. And they're in school.
Yes.
So you're on spring break. Really a nice arrangement.
It is. It works
good for you. So are you going to take her to lunch? Well, I guess we're going down to Airlight Plastics, in fact. So the Midwest Safety Cooperative is meeting down at Airlight Plastics at 11:30. I don't know if this doesn't get broadcast live, so it will be too late, but we're going to go down and you're going to talk to a bunch of my colleagues, some safety people from other organizations around town, and you're going to come down to Airlight, get a tour of the injection molding plant. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. I've been in that facility on calls before. Just never been down there for this before.
That's going to be great. Yeah, this will be a really responsive group because all of them appreciate the importance of this. From a safety standpoint, we all know that we need to be doing this. We just need to make sure that it gets to the bosses and the decision makers.
For sure.
And like you said, once they see the training, once they appreciate what the intent is, it changes their mind. They realize we need to do this.
Yeah.
You know,
so we just want everybody to know how simple these skills are. But until you actually sit through the classes, you don't realize how rudimentary they are. You almost need that confidence to jump in and act. So, you know, even if you can't make it to one of our classes, seek out education online somewhere. You can find out how to put tourniquets on online. But these in-person classes really, I feel like, empower people to really act in the case of emergency.
Right. Well, and again, we don't want to just focus on the morbid, but Nebraska, Iowa, these are constitutional carry states. Mm-hmm. People are carrying handguns. Probably in unprecedented numbers, you know. I mean, I just, accidents are going to happen as a result of that. If you are a hunter, if you are an outdoorsman, if you are a concealed carry person, you have an obligation to have this training. I mean, that shouldn't even be a question.
For sure.
So, you know, if that's your world, then you need to do this as well. But
one of the other things that we talk about with the active shooter space and really any the hunter space as well is if you look at the data with active shooters specifically, 50 to 65% of the injuries are not needing a tourniquet. Just based off a sheer surface area, you look at the Las Vegas shooting, where do you think most of the injuries were? Thoracic in nature, right? The sheer surface area, that guy aiming down from the Mandalay Bay on that concert. But in most public facilities, they don't carry what we call occlusive dressings. We need to protect what's called our airway with what we call a tension pneumothorax. So very simple. We teach how to do that as well. So it's just a bunch of small things that are very important in the grand scheme of things that we teach. And people are like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And it's life-saving measures.
Yeah, fantastic. I really appreciate what you guys do, both of you. Really important stuff. It's something that everybody needs to know. These are skills that every person truly needs to know, particularly in the workplaces that I visit. I want every place that I go into to have an AED, selfishly.
Yeah.
You know, because as an old man with a heart condition, damn it, I want somebody to, you know, put that on me when I go down, because I know it's going to happen.
Yeah,
at some
sudden
point.
Cardiac arrest knows no boundaries. And it just recently we responded to a gentleman that was in his 20s. And those are the people that survive. But if you don't have that equipment and they don't know CPR, that patient won't survive.
Wow.
So, as you know, like in the state of Nebraska, they're not requiring AEDs in certain facilities like they are in, let's say, California. But we're getting there. And people are understanding, like, oh, I own a doctor's office. Maybe I should have one because I have unhealthy people that are coming in. And so we have that discussion with people a lot, too. And then we have people that go overboard. They're like, hey, I need three AEDs. I'm like, hold on, let's see here. Like, how big's your building? Well, it's, you know, 10,000 square feet. Well, can you get there? The American Heart Association wants one within a 3-minute walk. That's a minute and a half down, a minute and a half back. So we'll come in and do free assessments just to make sure that you're not spending too much money.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure you can't go overboard and have too many machines in there, but you don't want to just spend money recklessly. And we'll help out with that.
That's fantastic.
There's a lot of great equipment out there. Some of them, like for instance, Zoll, which is the same monitor that most of the fire departments around the area carry. We carry those same AEDs. So what that means for us on arrival as the fire departments is we very simply just disconnect your pads, connect them right into our monitors. There's no interruption to care at all.
Fantastic.
Some of those, the new units, that it's one set of pads for pediatrics and adults. So you're not switching out pads, trying to decide who, oh, I can't remember from CPR. And as everybody knows from taking CPR class, you can use adult pads on kids. You just can't use kids pads on adults. Well, you can easily get confused when when the shit hits the fan. So, there's a lot of great technology out there. So let us help with that.
And I think a lot of people like are concerned to help people in certain instances that they'll be maybe sued if the person dies. Right. But you said there's a Good Samaritan.
Yep. So in the state of Nebraska, the Good Samaritan law. So civilly, you're not going to get sued for trying to act. And that's the big thing that everybody's afraid of with Narcan. Narcan is very benign. And so facilities are afraid to carry it because they're like, what if I give it and they don't have opioids in the system? Well, you're not going to do any harm. There's no contraindications of Narcan, like reasons we would not give it, but there's more so sensitivities.
Okay.
So things like you could, if that patient is truly dependent upon opioids and you give them the 4 milligrams of Narcan intranasal, you're going to potentially throw them into immediate withdrawal. And what that means, they might start throwing up. But we can all agree that throwing up is way better than that patient not breathing, you know. So it's very a low risk for actually having the Narcan. It's minimal.
I didn't know that either, man.
Yeah. And so Narcan is a very safe drug. I could take it right now, squirt it up all of our noses, and it went, if there's no Narcan, no opioids in the system, it's not going to do any harm.
Okay.
There's a lot of times where we're unsure on calls and we're like, well, I don't know. They're not breathing. Ventilation is the king. We need to ventilate these patients because what opioids does is makes you stop breathing, right? A lot of people think, well, I thought opioids kills you. Well, ultimately it does. But what it does first is it makes your breathing slow down to the point where it stops.
Okay.
And the Narcan comes in and it works. And let's
overrides that.
Yeah, so essentially you have these chemoreceptors in your body that work on central nervous system. The opioids get in your system and they connect into them, and it starts slowing things down. So what happens is your pupils constrict, Your breathing slows down. The body just relaxes. The patient starts to become sluggish, and they sound—they essentially sound like they're just drunk sometimes. Mm-hmm. Which is why a lot of the bars have us come in and teach this, because they're having patrons pass away, and they think they're just—I just thought they were drunk.
And then
they go home, and the opioids take over those receptors. The patient stops breathing. And then over the course of time with not breathing, that patient eventually becomes deceased. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So here comes Narcan. We give Narcan up through the nose. It has an affinity much greater than the actual opioids. Mm-hmm. It knocks the opioid off of the receptor, and it fits in there like a key, and it prevents the opioid from connecting. So over the course of 2 to 3 minutes, that patient starts to wake up and starts to breathe on their own.
Okay.
The biggest problem that we're having as EMS in the pre-hospital setting with Narcan is not the fact that it does harm, but the fact that it works so well that people are waking up and they're like, well, I don't need to go to the hospital. I'm fine. In the state of Nebraska, if you're awake and alert times person, place, time, or event, you're in your right mind. We cannot force you to go to the hospital. And so we have to have this hard discussion with them where we're like, look, eventually that Narcan only works for 30 to 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. Eventually that's going to wear off. The opioids remains in the system longer. The opioids are going to take back over the system, and that patient's going to be right back into that respiratory distress and the respiratory failure. So what this patient needs, even though we got them back with Narcan, they need to go to the hospital. We need to they need an IV drip of Narcan to wait until the opioids are flushed out of the system. So it's just, that's our biggest issue with it, is that we have this constant sales cycle to people. Like, we're like, hey, you got to go because you might go home, take a nap and not wake up ever.
Right.
So, but it's an amazing drug. And obviously the government making it over the counter as of September of last year was a huge step. Mm-hmm. And, there's really no reason that some of these facilities aren't carrying it right now. And it's accidental. So we don't have employees that do drugs. Well, maybe you don't, but I'll tell you what, I bet you have employees that are going through cancer treatment that are prescribed fentanyl patches or, you know, we're seeing a lot of accidents out there.
Accidental.
In the workplaces.
Wow.
So
I didn't know any of that either, man. So I need to sit through this class this afternoon as well. This is really important information. I thank you both for what you're doing, first and foremost. You guys are obviously servants. You know, you have that servant heart to be able to go out and do this stuff all the time, to teach. My wife is a teacher. I know what that's like, to do what you guys are doing. So thank you for that, first of all. Second of all, everybody that's listening needs to get in touch, Tulaco Safety Solutions. Get a class scheduled, at least sit down and talk, make sure, you know, figure out how to make this happen. Everybody needs to make it happen. And then hopefully you can come back and we'll do this again in 6 months and you'll say, my work is done, Doug. Everybody's trained. Everybody's equipped.
Love it.
We're all good. Go wherever you want to now.
I love it.
And feel safe.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
Really enjoy it. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend. And we'll talk to you next Friday. Bye-bye.
Huda Media Production.